This episode is brought to you by Oddmos Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This episode is also brought to you by Chris Salee, your local Health Markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Expert advice at 503-678-5768. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The Planning Commission on Monday approved Stanton Furniture's request to build a 174,000-square-foot manufacturing and distribution facility in Canby Industrial Park. The facility will become the new home base of the company as they relocate their approximately 300 employees and their entirety of their operations currently based in Tualatin. As Jason Salen, principal of Portland-based firm VLMK Engineering and Design, explained during the public hearing, the jobs are a big deal. Stanton would immediately become one of the city's largest private employers, rivaling even their new neighbor, Columbia Distributing, who also anticipate housing around 300 employees, but a facility that is three times larger.
That said, the business is obviously bringing a lot of jobs to Canby, which, the opportunity for growth, which is, I'm assuming, why Canby created this industrial park, is why some of the things that you want to have in these developments. I think the initial requirement was 10 employees per acre, and this development far exceeds that. So the normal condition that was in place before is not really applicable to this because we're bringing so many employees to the area.
The project site is located between Sequoia Parkway and South Molino Road, with access to Southeast 4th Avenue to the north, a road that is currently unfinished. The developers will be expected to provide half-street improvements to city standards along 4th Avenue and Molino Road. The facility will be mostly warehouse space, 160,885 square feet of it, along with about 6,500 square feet of office space and 6,500 square feet of storage. The project will also include employee parking, 36 loading docks, most of them along Molino Road, and a yard area, as well as required landscaping. The company proposes to split their employees between two shifts, one that starts about 5:30 a.m. and runs through 3, and one that starts 3 p.m. and runs through midnight. Traffic-wise, the project is expected to generate an estimated 460 new daily trips, approximately 64 of them during the peak a.m. rush hour and 69 during the peak p.m. rush hour. The vast majority of that would be employee traffic, not trucks, according to the company representative, who estimated the facility would receive only about 3 trucks a day, with 8 to 10 outbound. Some residents questioned these numbers during the public comment period, wondering why a facility would need 36 bays to load or unload only 10 to 12 trucks a day. As ever, traffic and the condition of local roads is a major concern for the residents, including Planning Commission Chair John Savory.
My biggest concern with all of the last few projects has been traffic. I think traffic is horrible now. I think that adding all of the new truck traffic and people using 99 to get to Stanton, to Caruso, and to Columbia Distributing is, as Brian said, somebody's going to come along and say, this is unbearable. You can't live with this.
Chair Savory, however, also stated that he was in favor of this project as presented, and he voted to approve it, joined by four colleagues. Commissioner Jason Taylor was the lone dissenter. Commissioner Jennifer Trundy was absent. Stanton is a family-owned and operated furniture manufacturer known for their high-quality sofas, recliners, and other home furnishings, which are designed with unique features to add comfort, durability, and customer satisfaction, and come with a lifetime guarantee. Over the past 40 years, Stanton has manufactured more upholstered furniture than any other company based in the Pacific Northwest. In their initial application, the company anticipated that they would start construction in the spring and complete the project by next February. A further discussion of sizable property tax incentives that appear to be due to Columbia Distributing's new 530,000 square foot beverage warehouse, don't know why that number was so hard for me, and distribution facility in Canby has been postponed. This is because of, quote, procedural issues. The county and the State Economic Development Agency, Business Oregon, are now reviewing. The incentives are through the Clackamas County Rural Strategic Investment Zone, a Business Oregon program administered by the county. Canby has been a part of the program since 2010, along with the cities of Sandy, Molalla, and Estacada, but Columbia Distributing is the first company to apply for it. Under the SIZ, taxes on any assessed valuation in excess of $25 million are abated for 15 years. In return, the company must pay 25% of the savings, up to a maximum of $500,000, toward a community service fee whose disbursement must be determined through an agreement between the city, county, and other taxing districts. In this case, Canby School District and Canby Fire. The matter sparked tension when it came before the city council 2 weeks ago. Most councilors claimed to have no knowledge of the incentives Columbia appeared to be in line for and felt that they had misled constituents in previous discussions with those constituents about the most significant and impactful industrial project in the city's history. Canby Fire Chief Jim Davis and Fire Board President Steve Thurman also reported having no knowledge of it and asked for more time to determine how the tax breaks would impact them and their ability to provide district-wide service. Councilors agreed and voted to table the proposed resolution approving Columbia's application until their next meeting on February 5th. When the agenda for that meeting was posted this week, however, the resolution was nowhere to be found. Reached by email this afternoon, Canby City Administrator Scott LeClure, who had been with the city only since last October, explained that the delay was because, quote, the state of Oregon and Clackamas County are reviewing procedural issues regarding Columbia's application. Until these are worked out, the city has nothing to take action on, he continued. I'm hoping that these issues will be worked out by February 19th or the March 4th meetings. It's not known exactly what these procedural issues might be, but they could have something to do with the questions raised during last night's meeting about whether Columbia had followed the proper procedures required by law. Counselors and a lawyer representing the fire district had pointed out places where the program seemed to require the SIZ application to be submitted and approved before the start of construction activities. In this case, the city received their application in June, weeks after demolition and other groundwork had begun on the site. However, Canby Economic Development Director Jamie Stickle said city staff and the company had been working closely with Business Oregon throughout this process and had been assured the project remains eligible for the SIZ. An amended agenda from the city recorder late Friday afternoon included the addition of an update regarding Columbia's Distributing Strategic Investment Zone application, but still did not include a revising of the resolution that was tabled. Setting the agenda for council meetings is the purview of the mayor of Canby per the city charter. Charity Gales, a bartender at Rounders, and Kim Akins of Canby Trophy didn't go to work on November 22nd, expecting to save a life, but that's exactly what they did. During a brief ceremony at Rounders Thursday afternoon, the Cambie Fire District recognized the two women for their heroic efforts in saving a life of a Cambie man experiencing sudden cardiac arrest, aka a heart attack.
So I happened to go after work to play a little video poker.
Yeah.
And usually I'm in and out of there pretty quick.
Sure.
Happened to have a $20 bill that kept paying and paying and paying. And
yeah. So this was at night.
It was at night in the evening. It was after 5 because I close at 5.
Sure.
And gentleman was sitting there, and I've known him for a long time. Mm. We kind of banter back and forth a little bit. Yeah. If I get a bonus, he gets a bonus, you know, type
nice,
of thing.
And, nice. And we're not going to say names or anything.
No.
Can you tell us about how old?
He's in his 70s,
okay.
I believe.
Okay.
That's, yeah. And his son was there that night, too. And he's in, you know, obviously of age to be in there and everything. But he's kind of his caregiver.
Cool.
And I just happened to look over, and I saw him start to kind of seize up a little bit. And his son saw it about the same time. So put him on the ground and to call 911, and realized within a little bit that he wasn't breathing. It took a little bit, you know, to kind of watch him a little while. And then we started CPR. And then Charity actually started the CPR. I took over the phone with 911 operator to wait for the police to get there or ambulance, whoever. But there was a train coming going across the track. So the police got there first since they probably were on this side of town.
Right,
so,
right.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, when you're describing it, like you're so matter of fact, Kim, but was it pretty scary, or did you just go into action mode, or what happened? I mean, I'd be terrified.
Well, I have experienced two heart attacks in my personal life with a husband and a boyfriend. I knew exactly what it was. I really didn't know if he would survive or not, but I knew what it was. And so I think for some reason I was just super calm and helped Charity more than anything. I don't think I really did too much, but she was the one that went into doing the CPR and stuff like that. I kind of just kept everybody else, you know, calm and whatever.
Gotcha. So Charity was actually performing the chest compressions, and you were kind of managing the crowd and just doing whatever you could until the police officers got there. And then I understand that the officers and eventually the fire personnel actually took over the care and compressions.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah. So how does it feel? I know you guys, you and Charity, were recognized as citizen heroes by the fire district. How does it feel? You know, in this case, fortunately, the victim did survive and made a full recovery from what we hear, which is awesome.
Yes.
So how does it feel to play that role?
It was good. I mean, you know, anytime you can help out somebody because you're there in a situation, I think people should step up and do that. And I just happened to be know what I was looking at, so I think that helped a lot. And it feels good to actually use some skills that you might have accumulated over the years and actually use them for something good,
right,
you know.
Right.
So
yeah.
Cambie Fire teaches CPR classes and provides access to Pulse Point smartphone application for free download, which provides alerts to public cardiac arrests throughout Cambie. Each minute a cardiac arrest patient goes without CPR, there is a 10% reduction in survival. In 2019, Cambie Fire responded to 2,999 calls, 14 of which were for cardiac arrest and resulted in 5 lives saved. Learn more about how you can be a part of the chain of survival in our community by calling Cambie Fire at 503-266-5851 or by emailing learncpr@cambiefire.org. With Valentine's Day just around the corner, the last place you want to be is in the doghouse. And few things are more sure to put you out there, next to old Fido, than doing something stupid while driving and getting yourself a ticket. You'll want to drive the roads around Cambie extra carefully starting this week, as the Cambie Police Department has announced that they will once again participate in Click It or Ticket, a nationwide safety traffic campaign to emphasize the importance of proper safety belt use. Additionally, the campaign focuses on the perils of distracted driving and unlawful speeding. The program is set to begin today, February 3rd, and continue through the 16th. The two-week blitz is a multi-jurisdictional approach to help ensure motorists respect, obey, and understand the importance of driving safely and the associated responsibilities of operating a motor vehicle. Camby police officers will be focusing on enforcement at various times and days during the campaign. They'll be watching for overall seatbelt compliance, along with violations surrounding unlawful cell phone use, such as talking or texting while driving, speeding, and driving without a valid license. The most recent ODOT crash data shows lack of safety belts or child restraint use was a factor in 22% of the motor vehicle fatalities in our state. Speeding was a factor in 30% of the traffic fatalities last year in Oregon, and the unlawful use of mobile phones continues to be a frequent cause of crashes as well. And for you parents out there, seatbelt compliance also means car seat compliance. A child over the age of 2 must continue to ride in a car seat with a harness or in a booster until they reach age 8 or 4 feet 9 inches in height and the adult belt fits them correctly. Motor vehicle crashes are the leading nationwide cause of death for children ages 1 to 12 years old. This enforcement effort is made possible through the dedicated federal funding that will provide overtime opportunities to carry out the campaign. Drive safe and remember to buckle up. Lattenberry, former cornerback of the Los Angeles Rams and Cleveland Browns, and two-sport All-American and Hall of Fame record holder at University of Oregon, was in Camby this week to inspire the Cougar football team. Whether on the gridiron, in the weight room, or on the track, where he set the school records and stood for decades, Berry was a feared competitor who never backed down or admitted defeat. There are many stories that could be shared in retelling the legend of Lattenberry, who was a big part of the early days of Oregon Duck football that set the fledgling program on a path to national prominence that it enjoys today. One story shared by Camby football coach Jimmy Joyce was that he supposedly squat lifted 500 pounds on the same day he broke the state record in the triple jump, or so the legend goes. Latin later confirmed that that story is indeed true. On Friday morning, he told the Cougs a little bit about where his intensity comes from.
You screwing with me today, I'm going to be the one to carry you to your grave, Pip. You're screwing with the wrong one. And I don't care how big you are, how small you are, how you bring it, you better bring it right. You might kick my tail, but you're going to know I've been it. It doesn't matter. But it all starts in here. Our attitude and our minds didn't change until he showed up. He showed us a different way. Don't matter. I'm probably one of the smallest guys out there on the field. I went to Milwaukee. When they put me out there, I did everything but try to get hit. But there was a reason. I was trying not to get tapped. So I ran left, and I ran right, and I ran left, and I gave the wrong signal. What was the signal? Hey, we got Milwaukee this week. They got a guy that named Latin, but he's scared. He is scary. Hit him a couple times, and we win the game. That was a mistake. Because my mentor here pulls me to the side. Latin, here's what they're saying about you. He's saying you're scared. You run scared. My mind's saying I'm trying to win, and they're calling me scared. Is there fear in my eye? There is no fear, bro. There is no fear. Can't no man touch me. If he get me because I wasn't looking. He didn't look me in the eye and say he was coming. He snuck. All right? So I knew what I had coming. And when we got on the field, this team said, Milwaukee does not even belong on the field with us. Do y'all hear stuff like that? Do people think you don't even deserve to be on the field with them? Let me tell you what happened. First play of the game, two linebackers, right up the middle, give it to Lattenberry. Only thing on Lattenberry's mind is, they said I was scared. The two linebackers I hit in the mouth, they don't believe that. When I got through with them, I was in the end zone. They was on their back. If they still call it this, they call it a D-cleat. And guess what? It was on fifth. It was on film. What I'm saying is, don't matter where you come from, don't matter your size. Here's another old one for you, Coach. Coach Brooks used to say, it's not about the size of the dog in the fight. Y'all heard that one? It's about the size of the fight in the dog. And I'll bring a fight. Nobody can. I'll bring a fight. I'm going to bring it. That's what y'all bring. I'm telling you, it starts in here. Y'all are doing something unprecedented. You got to put it down. When you come in here, it's a different mindset.
After Latin's talk, Coach Joyce told his team that they were welcome to stay and work out or go home. There was no school on Friday because it was grading day. Evidently inspired, every single one of his students stayed to lift. The Cougars are in their second year under Coach Joyce, and his staff just finished last season on a 2-game win streak. They'll also be playing their first year at the 5A classification after a move that was offered by the OSAA. A way too early 2020 preseason ranking for 5A football by the Oregonian a couple of months ago placed Camby at number 3 in the state. Camby Sports is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Camby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. It was a busy week and weekend for Camby Athletics. It was senior night this week for the Camby wrestling team as the Cougs hosted the neighboring Pioneers from up the road at Oregon City. Camby took an early 18-0 lead with pins in their first three matches by Landon Sprague at 106, Ethan Enstrud at 113, and Nick Marquez at 120. But it's not over until the fat lady sings, as they say. Pioneers were down, but certainly not out, and they came back roaring in the middle of the duel with 5 straight wins, including 4 pins to take the lead. 4 fits in 2 weight classes put Camby back on top, but Oregon City had the momentum. The decisive match fell to sophomore Matthew Hagen wrestling 220, and he had his work cut out for him. He avoided 2 near falls to get the pin and earned the victory in the last seconds of round 2. This Thursday, the Camby wrestling team will travel to Tualatin for their final duel of the regular season before the league championship on Valentine's week. The same night, both girls and boys Camby swim teams continued their fantastic seasons, winning their own duels against Oregon City. The Camby boys basketball team has cooled in Three Rivers League play after a 3-0 start. They've now lost 3 in a row to even things up, most recently on the road to Lake Oswego, 48-59. They'll have a chance to turn things around this Friday as they draw Tigard home. The Tigers are ranked 8th in the state and 11-6 on the season, though only 1-4 in league play. More importantly, the Cougs won their only meeting earlier this year, a 58-46 upset that stunned Tigard at home. No doubt, the Tigers will be looking to return the favor when they come to Camby High School Friday. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. The Camby girls basketball team halted their 2-game skid Friday against Lake O, improving to 9-6 on the season and 3-3 in the Three Rivers League. They have 2 games this week, both on the road. On Wednesday, they'll be facing the surging St. Mary's Academy, who has won 8 of their last 10, and wrap the week versus the struggling Tigard Tigers. The Camby Cougar dance team hosted their 15th annual Winter Festival of Dance this weekend, and our own Tyler Frankie was honored to be one of the guest judges at the event. All he knows about dancing is that when he does it, people just ask him to stop. But hey, he did his best. The Cougars, of course, have won the state show championship 5 years running, or is it dancing, not running, and are going for the 6th year in a row. Check out the Camby Now podcast Facebook page for photos of all the awesome routines. The Camby stunt and sideline team took home 2nd place in the crowd-leading non-tumbling division of the Westland Cheer competition on Saturday. So, big shout out to them.
The Can Be Now podcast is brought to you in part by DirectLink, where technology meets tradition. Canby's longest running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, DirectLink has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, DirectLink paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude for the Can Be Now Plus member, Lauren Teague. We rely on your monthly contributions. Man, I'm really not sure if I got that right. Lauren, thank you so much. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, and get your name messed up by this guy, visit campingoutpod.com/plus.
So my guest on the Can Be Conversation today is Nick Coleman. He's a Can Be Area Director for Can Be Young Life. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
So good.
Yeah. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about Young Life. I'm not from here.
Okay.
So not even from like this coast or this area. Oh. So Young Life was like, you know, I'd never heard of it. And then I came out here and everyone's like, you haven't heard of Young Life? It's like huge. And there's this and this and this. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But I still don't know too much about it. So tell me about it.
Yeah. I mean, Young Life is an international organization at this point. So we're in 100.
They haven't reached Maine yet.
So. Over 100 countries. Well, Maine's kind of up there. So I don't know about, I'm sure that we're in Maine.
I'm sure you are. Yeah.
But over 100 countries. It's over 75 years old, Young Life. And, kind of has been increasingly growing in impact. And
what do you do?
We are an incarnational relational ministry. That's what we like to call it. So incarnation being the idea
you
that
do it in fields of carnations, like flowers.
Exactly. Yeah. No, when I tell the kids is incarnation has the same root word as carne asada.
Oh, nice.
Which means meat.
Yeah. And I bet that's a big hit with the youth.
It is. It really helps the mental picture, but, incarnation is in reference to Jesus coming to earth.
It does actually have the same root, right? With the flesh.
Uh-huh,
yeah,
exactly. And so meat. Jesus putting on flesh, God in a bod is
yeah.
a fun little term. But Jesus came to where the people were who needed saving.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that we go to where kids are. We go and spend time in the world of kids. We go on campus of the school at sporting events and drama events and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's where we first met was at Can Be Football Homecoming.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are doing some fun stuff out there, throwing darts at balloons, I think.
Oh, yeah. We were a part of the Cougar Fest, which was their tailgate party.
Oh, and also throwing toilet paper into a Home Depot bucket. I remember that.
We come up with all sorts of fun stuff. Yeah. And then, so incarnational, we show up where kids are, and then relational, I mean, it's all about relationships. Relationships are all that matters to kid. Relationships is where life change happens. And there's a bunch of research that I could show you about where kids are hurting and what is going on in the world of kids and adolescent development. But the bottom line is that the most important thing in a kid's life towards fostering resilience, towards successfully navigating adolescence, is a trusted adult, somebody who cares, somebody who shows up, somebody who knows them by name.
Cool.
So that's what we're about.
Awesome. Well, I want to ask you more because I'm very interested in that kind of the needs of the younger generation and what you see in your work here in Canby. But first, I want to ask you about yourself and how you kind of got into this because, I mean, I don't know if I could necessarily think of something more terrifying than hanging out with a bunch of teenage kids and asking them like deeper questions. Like it sounds like you do.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of parents and things I talk to, my kids aren't at this age yet, but there's like, you just got to get past the teenage years or whatnot, you know, and you've chosen this as a profession. Yeah. So, or a calling.
I mean, as a parent, I've got a son who's turning 13 here in about a month.
Uh-huh.
And as a parent, it can be terrifying, but as a youth worker, as somebody who cares about kids, it's not as scary as it might seem. And in fact, that's what we tell people who are at all thinking about it. And we need leaders to come and walk alongside us. But like, it's exciting to be able to get to know a kid, to learn their name, to hear their story, to have the privilege of them share with you what's going on in their lives, and then earn the right to be heard and to see the light of hope come on in a kid's life is worth it all. I mean, it's worth any kind of hardship and it gets easier as you go. I remember the first time that I moved to town and went to the football game by myself, and I was terrified myself. And I've been doing this kind of thing for a long, long time.
That is surprising, because you guys can't see Nick Coleman, but he is at least 6.5 feet tall.
Not a small man.
Yeah, he's got a beard. He always dresses like a lumberjack. I don't know if that's like a Portland thing, but anyway.
I guess so. Yeah. No, I stand out. But it can be scary, but then again, it's totally worth it. It's totally worth any kind of difficulty. And we've got an awesome team here in town, so it's not just me going out there by myself, but we kind of go alongside each other and show up in the world of kids together.
Is that other sort of youth pastors and people involved in youth, as well as some teens, I understand?
We've got a great network in the community, so we've got really great relationships with local churches and things like that, but we've got a dedicated team of leaders and support people committee that are invested in Young Life. And so we've got ranging from, you know, college age students up to adults with kids and everywhere in between, of people who are going out there with me, going out there in the world of kids, and have been doing it longer than me. Canby Young Life started over a decade ago and has been run by volunteers for a long time, and really successfully built those bridges and opened those doors into the world of kids.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the privilege of being able to talk to kids and, you know, hear their burdens and their struggles and things, is that... are those depths a little bit easier to plumb than it seems like? Teens always kind of get, and I was absolutely this kind of teenager, get that reputation of being very closed, especially to adults maybe.
Yeah.
Do you find that they're more open in talking about that stuff than people would think?
You've definitely got to prove that you're trustworthy. Mm. I mean, you got to earn the right to be heard. But once you develop a relationship, it starts to come. And then, you know, when especially like camp, which is a big deal for us, when we get kids out of town and we have shared experiences with them, we actually jump in the mud pit right alongside of them. and those kinds of things, we work really, really hard to open those doors to again, earn the right to be heard, which is a phrase I've said a couple times, but one that we love in Young Life because, man, that's what we're doing. And kids want to share. Kids want to talk about what's going on in their lives. They want to talk about deeper issues too, I believe. But there's not a lot of places in our society where those kinds of questions of origin, meaning, morality, and destiny are coming up. Mm. And so, you know, we think that that's some of the most important things. We think the good news of Jesus is the most important thing that a kid can hear. And so,
And maybe providing that space where they are able to lead that conversation a little bit instead of being talked to. You know what I mean?
We are all about asking questions. Mm. We're all about, how do you feel? How do you respond to this? And then we love kids no matter what their response is. So if they say, this is nonsense, you're stupid for believing that, we say, great. Do you want to play another game? You know, it's just like... Yeah, absolutely. It's about them wrestling with, it's about them interacting with the stories and us just facilitating and being there as, again, that trusted adult.
Well, let's go there. What kind of stuff do you hear from kids? What's kind of the pulse of the needs or the challenges, the struggles of, I'm sure every story and every person's unique, and we don't want to give the impression that it's not, but maybe some things that folks don't realize that are sort of facing our teenagers in the local area. Mm.
I mean, life is hard. Life is hard as an adolescent. Life is hard.
Newsflash, guys.
Right? Like, and we know this, and I think that we see this, and we hate to compare generations, but I think increasingly it becomes harder in the world today to grow up. And increasingly there's, I mean, again, you asked for personal stories, but I could talk about statistics as well and talk about, like, The amount of our kids who face trauma in their life is staggering. The percentages of kids who have experienced hurt and pain and loss and abuse and all those kinds of things in our community. We've got tons of stories of kids who just have hard, hard lives. And even the kids who have apparently good lives, who have that intact family and supportive parents and success in school and sports and activities and all those kinds of things. Even those kids are wrestling with, man, do I fit in?
Yeah.
Do I belong? Does anybody care? Who am I in this world? Do I make a difference? Does my existence mean anything?
Right. Nobody gets a pass.
Nobody gets a life. Pass. Absolutely. Yeah. And so it's just hard. It's hard to grow up. It's hard, increasingly hard. And then, you know, the way that our world is going, I would say, and just one example is social media and technology, where kids are increasingly hyper-connected on one hand and yet totally isolated and feeling disconnected from the world more and more. And the tie into anxiety and depressive disorders and mental health is huge. And the statistics on that are staggering as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the bottom line is kids are hurting. And I think everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But we get to hear the personal stories and see, like, yeah, life is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, and you mentioned the importance of relationship with, mm-hmm. with kids and mm-hmm. with teens. I don't know how much you see this or sort of hear this, but sometimes people talk about the possibility of a little bit of a bullying issue, like in high school, especially through mm-hmm. social media, mm-hmm. I think can be a problem. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you see, a large number of kids, and I mean, call it what you will, like necessarily bullying, but just tough relationships, I guess. Yeah. Like, is that a really tough thing that you see with kids and how do you kind of help with that as an adult who's can see that from a little bit of a different lens? Like, it's not necessarily that big of a deal that Stacy doesn't think you're cool or whatever. Sure.
Yeah. It's a real thing for sure. It happens in our community for sure. Kids can be mean. I mean, middle schoolers can be real, real mean, and there's social media provides that anonymity that just kind of ups the ante, right? Yeah. Just kind of provides for even more vitriol and whatever kind of speech that there is. But the best thing that you can do, again, is to show up, is to say, man, that stinks. Like, yeah. I'm sorry that you have to validate deal with
feeling. Yeah, that it's not stupid to feel that way.
And what I love to tell kids is that what you're going through is real, and don't compare that to anybody else's struggle. Like, oh, I don't have it as bad as Jimmy over there.
Yeah.
Man, what you are going through is real and absolutely hard and painful, and it stinks. And I'm sorry that you have to deal with that. But on the other hand, I'm here. Like, I care. I know you. I know your story, and I care, and that you belong here. Like, you have a place here in our group and whatever you want to talk about, I'm here to listen. Those kind of things are the most helpful, I think.
Cool. Well, talk about this summer. You said it's the best summer you've ever had.
Absolutely crazy to see.
How long have you been here, by the way?
I'm in my third year.
Okay. So, go ahead.
We the summer of 2018 was the biggest for Canby Young Life. We took over 100 people to camp. It was a big milestone for us. And so fast forward then to summer of 2019, we took 50% more than the year before. So over 150 people, 126 of them students. We did 4 different camp trips, and it was just incredible. We saw dozens of kids kind of make a decision in their life, either to follow Jesus or to make some changes or whatever that case might be. And we saw real life change. We saw real impact and just a lot of excitement coming off of the summer into the fall. And it's cool that we show up to camp, and we're a pretty small town. We've got one middle school, one high school, but when we show up to camp, we show up to camp. And like, we're not the small group at camp anymore. We're there with big cities, but we've got good representation, and we're loud, and we make ourselves known, and we even get in trouble sometimes, but we have a good time because Canby shows up to camp, and it's so fun. It's so exciting to be a part of.
You guys have gotten in trouble for being too loud?
Yeah, I mean, just normal, not nothing serious.
No, no, but I don't mean like the okay, police are coming or anything.
Okay, kids, calm down. Okay, Canby, like we get it. Like,
yeah.
Which is nice. Awesome, right? Like, yeah. That's what we want, kids who are all in and loving it, and that's what we got. And so yeah. It just, it's an honor to lead the team that's a part of it. It's an honor to be a part of it, and it's... Mm. It feels, it has so little to do with me. I just get to be the director, but the team, again, have been doing it for over a decade in Canby. There's people who have invested their lives, who give their time and efforts and sweat and blood and tears. And yeah, and, yeah, it's exciting time.
Mm, yeah. I really love that. Like that warms my heart, because I just think that anything that provides, a positive place for kids where they can get, you know, legitimately excited about something, almost regardless of what it is. Like, maybe not like, you know, terrorism or something, but like, you know what I mean? Like no, most things, I think.
Yeah.
And because kids are unique, you know, and they have different interests. Like, so whether it's like FFA or sports or dance or whatever, you know, I really think that that's great. So,
yeah. And one of our kind of values is that kids deserve to be kids. Kids deserve to have fun. Kids deserve to go crazy and jump in the mud and yell and scream and run around and eat candy until 10:30 at night, and then go through an obstacle course until somebody throws up, and it's probably going to be me. But
that's like so gross.
We
oh, that visual, man.
We go take kids kind of to the middle of nowhere. We take away their phones.
Yeah, where is the camp?
So the arm. Closest camp, the one that we've spent the most time at, is in Central Oregon.
Okay. So it moves around.
Oh, there's lots of camps.
So yeah.
Young Life has properties, again, all over the world.
Yeah.
But, we take kids to the middle of nowhere. We take away their phones. They've got no access to anything.
Right. So far, I'm not seeing kids getting excited about this.
But they do, right? But they do. We show them a phrase that I love is good, clean, fun. Mm. Like, you don't need substances, you don't need vices, you don't need sex, and you don't need all these things to have a good time. That life is good, and that we can celebrate together. One of our favorite verses is in the book of John, where Jesus says in John 10:10, I have come that you would have life and life to the full, life more abundantly. Like, life is good. Kids deserve to be kids. Let's go out and do stupid things together and be crazy and be silly and again jump in the mud or throw shaving cream on your leader's face.
Yeah.
And let's just show you that life is good. And despite the pain, right? We don't say that life is not hard as well. That there's still stuff going on.
Right. Just forget about all that. Right.
But be a kid for a little bit. Yeah. Like, let's have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, you know, we're running out of time here, but I'd love to hear a couple of fun camp stories. If you have any ones to share, or maybe just some really fun or crazy things that you guys do?
Boy, yeah. One story that I like to tell is that Creekside is a middle school camp in Central Oregon. So there's two camps on this property. And within that camp, there's a full-scale water park. And it was designed, I think the people who are like Disney engineers designed it. It's ridiculously cool. There's like 10 water slides.
What?
It's a full water park at the camp. There's activities nonstop, right? Uh-huh. As soon as you get off the bus, people are yelling and screaming to welcome you there, and we do stuff late at night.
Cinderella's there. You've got
everything is there. Everything you could want is there. The food is great. Like, it's just super, super fun, multi-million dollar property. And when kids at the end of camp, you say, what was your favorite part of camp? They say, the one-on-one conversation that I had with my leader, where he asked me about what was going on in my life, or cabin time, where we spent time after club every night with our group of guys from Canby or gals from Canby, and we talked about what we thought about what was going on and what was going on in our life. Like, the connections that I made and the people who cared about me was my favorite part of camp. And to see that is just mind blowing.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
You went on the water slides.
Right.
700 times.
Do you email that to the Disney engineers, like, just to make them feel bad? Like,
No, the people who design it, that's the whole point of camp, is to make those connections with your leader. And then, so a specific story, I've told this a few times, and one of my leaders and committee people joked with me that I've never told this story without crying. So here goes, let's see. We have young leaders who come and help lead the younger kids, right? So we've got college and sometimes even high school students who lead middle school students. And At the end of the week of middle school camp, the kids have an opportunity to make some kind of physical representation of a commitment that they've made. So if they make a decision for the first time to follow Jesus, to believe in Jesus or something like that, they write their name on a tile. And then there's a place up on the hill at camp where you place it. And there's thousands of these tiles of lives who have been changed by kids. And so we have one young leader, college age leader, who is leading a few of the girls from her cabin up the hill to place their tile. And she says, this is where my life changed. 6 years ago, I wrote a tile and put it right here. Like, I wonder if I could find it. Mm-hmm. She walks up and looks straight at her tile. Mm-hmm. And then the girls that she's leading put their tile next to hers.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So now we see, like, this has become a movement. This is like generations of life change where, like, crazy things are happening. People are growing up and then coming back to reinvest their lives and see the next generation change. Again, it's just crazy that we get to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's really cool. And also jump in some mud as well. So.
Oh, jumping mud, shaving cream in the face, spitting water all over people.
Right, like, get in trouble for being too loud.
Hey, come on, let's go. Turn up, Cambie.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing some of those stories. Before we let you go, is there anything that you want to share with the community about maybe stuff coming up or ways that they can support or learn more about what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking for people to join our team. We need help in a lot of ways. We need leaders who want to invest in the lives of kids. And again, it's not as scary as it sounds. I'd love to talk people through that. We need adults to be involved in committee and teams that put on events and help us with fundraising. And then we need fundraising. We need donors. We've got a $120,000 budget that's raised all locally. So we don't get any money from Young Life anywhere else, but it's all Canby, which pays for Canby Young Life. And so we need people to join the team in every way. And so to find out more, they can go to canby.younglife.org or reach out to me and I can give my contact information as well. But
Cool. Well, Nick, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Really thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know if it's an honor, but
it's fun to talk about and more people to hear about what's going on and invite people to join us.
Cool. Well, thank you for being on the show. Thanks for all that you do for our youth and in our community. I'm here at Advantage Mortgage with Derek Hill. And Derek, you were telling me about something that just came down from Fannie Mae that people might be interested in.
Yeah, Fannie Mae just came out with a report that said that the average homeowner in the United States has approximately 70% equity in their home.
Wow.
Right. I mean, that's obviously average throughout the whole country. But because values have come up so substantially in the last 10 years, there is a ton of equity available that people can utilize.
Cool. So if people are potentially like looking to buy or move into a new home, you're saying that equity means it might be something that you would look at remodeling instead of if the market's not looking favorable to you.
Right, 100%. Because the market in Portland is so tough to buy, you know, we have an average of like 2.5 months worth of inventory. So it's just super hard for people to find what they're looking for. It may be just easier for them to take out some equity and do the upgrades or do an addition or pay off some debt or lots of different things. And that's one of the things that we love to do with people is sit down with them and kind of go over a game plan. You know, that's one of the biggest things is knowing what you can do. And we love taking the time to do that for people.
Awesome. Awesome. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call.
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat. And we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
So just remember, Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, equal housing opportunity.
Okay, joining us on the line now is Marcel Abel. She's a Westland resident, but the founder and
co-president or president of a new company that's already making a splash here in Canby. Hi, Marcel.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking time out to talk to us. So your company is called CauseWater. The product is basically water. That's not necessarily something new, but the way it's packaged and kind of how you guys are presenting it to the market is definitely something different and really cool. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so we have purified water in a can. And it's funny because when people ask what I do for a living, and I say, I own a canned water company, and they kind of look at me like I'm crazy a little bit. And they're like, right. Okay, so you sell water.
It's weird how it's such a weird concept. But I mean, when you really think about it, it starts to make a lot of sense, and we'll talk about it. But yeah, when you first hear about it, you're like, what? Water comes in bottles.
Right, exactly. And that's our biggest challenge right now. But then, you know, the first 10 seconds of my spiel when people ask what I do is that look on their face like, oh, that's weird. Okay. But then the, you know, 30 seconds, the light bulb starts to come on and they're like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Because if you think about it, we've got soda in cans, we have sparkling water in cans, we have beer, we have wine in cans now. Mm-hmm, everyone's moving towards this global shift of more sustainable packaging. Yet we've got 15, 18 brands of plastic water bottles. When you go, you know, either to a convenience store or a grocery store or what have you, there's no canned water options. Now you do have, there's a couple of brands that do alkaline water, electrolyte water, but those are actually different. And a lot of people don't know that our water is straight purified. Basically, if you were going to grab, you know, a Aquafina, it would be the same thing. It's just highly purified, pH balanced water. And there's nothing right now on the market like that, especially in the Pacific Northwest. There's some over in the UK or something. But yeah, it's really interesting the people process they kind of go through and say, well, no, because there's plastic water bottles.
yeah, absolutely. Well, and you touched on it a little bit, but let's dig into that a little bit more as to kind of why this is a thing and why you guys are pushing it. And you mentioned that sustainability angle, but it's not just about bringing something different or something that doesn't exist in the market. There's a real reason for this.
Oh, absolutely. So just on a personal side, you know, my husband and I and our children, we travel quite a bit. It's just something we value. And so when we're traveling, you know, things are not always convenient.
Are you just trying to make us jealous at this point, Marcel?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. but we, you know, it's even simple as road trips. If we have a free weekend, it's like, hey, let's go to the coast, or let's, you know, last spring we went over to Southeast Asia just to get the kids some experience in the world. And like I said, everything, you know, when you're traveling, it's not convenient. You know, ideally in a perfect world, we would all have a, you know, big hydro flask and we would have amazing water to just refill at any time we want. But that is so not the reality, especially when you get out of the bubble of the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. You know, we are so blessed to have filtered water in our airports. Like when I go to an airport and we don't have filtered water, like that little, you know, where you put your water bottle under it and it shows you how many bottles it's filled up. When I don't see that, like in LAX, I feel like, what is going on here? Where is the clean water? And
yeah, and you have to like play that like arcade game where you're trying to like catch it from the just normal water fountain, and you like, you have to tilt it at like a really weird angle, and you can never get it completely full. Yeah.
It's funny and all those fun things. Yeah, exactly. And so when we travel, you know, we always bring our hydro flask. We're always refilling when we can. But we've noticed over our trips, either we're driving, we run out of water, and we stop to fill up gas. And we're like, hey, who needs water? And we run in and we're like, I don't want to buy plastic. Ugh, I just kind of, in the pit of our stomach, we know that it's just not the best option. And our kids are now 11. They understand, you know, why we make those choices. And so, and I kept saying, why isn't there canned water? Why am I looking at a whole case of canned Coke, but no canned water? Because we don't drink soda, we want water. And it just came to be one of those, well, if we can't find it, let's make it. You know, let's be those people that bring it to the market, because I know there's other people that have the same feeling as we do. And so it just became a solution to a problem that we've seen, whether it's locally in the United States, or if it's, you know, internationally, especially what we saw over in Bali was just, oh my gosh, it was mind blowing, the amount of garbage on the beaches. And, you know, they have a different situation. Obviously, they don't have filtered water in airports. They don't have things like that. And so, you know, at least we thought, okay, let's at least start at home. Let's start here and let's see if we can create a movement. Let's see if we can create a global shift and we realize that the education is going to be tricky because mm-hmm. people don't like change. They want 69-cent bottled Arrowhead water. They don't want to pay, you know, a little more for something that long term is going to be better for our planet, better for our children, our grandchildren, and so on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a million reasons why we've done this.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a lot of sort of just years and years and millions of people at this point of built-in buying habits that you're going to be pushing back against. But I mean, there's some facts that you share on your website and in a video that you made describing the product, but just the differences between aluminum cans versus plastic bottles and mm-hmm. how much, I mean, even though both are quote unquote recyclable, the mm-hmm. amount of plastic bottles versus cans that actually get recycled, you know, for various mm-hmm. reasons, either people just throw them away or they come in unclean or, you know, whatever. There's so many reasons, but it's less than 10% of plastic bottles that actually get recycled. They often end up in landfills or in the oceans, right. as you mentioned. And it's really, I mean, I wasn't even aware of the issue until I started really looking into it. But the plastic bottle thing is really catastrophic for our environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, and like I said, we're just trying to make an impact, you know, even if it's, you know, a million plastic bottles we can take off the earth, then that's great. Mm-hmm. And if this inspires other businesses create more sustainable packaging, that's great. If other companies start going towards canned water instead, that's great. You know, obviously we would like to, for this to be a business because we love what we do. And isn't that the dream, right? To love what you do every day. But if this creates a movement, then that's really the end result for us. Because, you know, even getting into this, I always thought plastic bottles, oh, I'll just recycle it, no big deal. But to your point, you know, I was looking on aluminumassociation.org and it was the average rate. There's an average rate and then a consumer rate. And so the average rate overall was like 4% of plastic gets recycled. And a lot of that isn't even recycled into more plastic bottles. It's downcycled into mattresses or furniture or clothing or whatnot. Right. And so then you still have to go through the process of creating more packaging, more virgin packaging.
Right.
And so aluminum is just, you know, there's no ideal situation. Like I said, I wish we had clean water for everyone on this planet, but that's just not the reality. But out of all the options, aluminum is the most efficient product we can use.
Right.
It's 100% recyclable. There's no stickers on it. There's no glue on it. There's no lid to take off. You just toss it in. And I think a lot of people, when they think beer cans or soda cans, they're kind of used to recycling them. Like, you just kind of know aluminum gets recycled.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not all states have the deposit return. But I think people are, you know, their mindset is aluminum is recyclable. And so we're kind of piggybacking on that belief too. Hey, if you're going to toss your beer can or take it to Safeway and get, you know, money back for it, let's do it with your can, your water cans too.
Yeah. And it's really amazing. I mean, aluminum is really an amazing element for a variety of reasons, but it can be recycled over and over and over again. In your video, you mentioned that 75% of the aluminum that's ever been put into the market as a product is still in the market because it's been recycled and reused, which is unbelievable.
Isn't that incredible?
It's incredible. Yeah.
That's just amazing. I mean, we just love that there's a product out there that we can use for this, but it's just, you know, it's going to take that education. It's going to take, you know, continuing to explain to people, hey, this is better. This is better. I know change is hard. I know it might be 25 or 50 cents more, but let's think long term.
Yeah.
And that's really the folk we're trying to really capture right now are the ones that say, yes, I get it.
Yeah.
It's the same as if you go into the grocery store and you've got regular strawberries for $1.99, but you've got organic strawberries for $3.99. You know, people are going to choose what's their priority. Is it cost or is it health? And so that's one of our challenges too, is to say, hey, yes, we know it's going to cost 25 cents more than plastic water bottles or 50 cents more, but let's think about what we're doing here. It's that simple action of choosing an alternative and more sustainable alternative like Causewater. It's those small actions that are going to lead to those ginormous impacts and that massive impact that the consumer has so much power over. You know, it's people always say, I just wish I knew what to do. I wish I knew what to do. I'm like, buy canned.
Right.
That's a small action.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned the grocery store, and the reason we grabbed you on the line, although we would love to, you know, just have you on anyway and talk about this really cool approach to a more sustainable future, hopefully. But we don't normally reach out to our neighbors in West Lynn. There is actually a Canby connection here because my understanding, your first sort of corporate customer is our beloved local grocery store here, Cutsforth Market.
Yes. That's they awesome. Are just so great. Yes. We were definitely pleased to see them believe in us and put us out there. It's like I said, we've been doing a lot of education. And so that's our biggest struggle, talking to other grocery stores, but they understood it. They got it and they said, let's do it. And so we are currently in Cutsforth Market.
Great.
In Canby right now.
Cool. So people can go over there and check out your product right now. They can buy it off the shelf. Awesome.
Yes, we have single cans for sale right now. We do. We will have them available in 24 packs, but just to start, we're doing single cans. So it's in the same area as you would go to grab a plastic water bottle, right there in the middle, squeezed between all of them in the sea of plastic. There's one alternative.
I love it. Cool. Yeah. Well, so the product is Cause Water, spelled K-O-Z. Correct. And the website is causewater.com if you want to check it out, or just run over to Cutsforth and grab a can.
Yes, thank you. That would be amazing.
Yeah, so anything to add, Marcel, before you go?
No, I don't think so. I just, you know, it's people like you and Cutsforth that are believing in us and the movement, and we're just hoping that, you know, we can just make an impact, you know, one person at a time, one action at a time, one can at a time. Yeah. So, yeah, we just appreciate you reaching out to us.
We're glad to support the cause.
Yes, that is our tagline. Join the cause. Get it?
Yeah, yeah. You must have had a dad help you with that one.
Oh, that's my husband. He's the king of dad jokes.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You just met me, so.
Oh, okay.
We'll see.
Now it's on.
Thanks, Marcel.
Thank you so much, Tyler.
All right. Best of luck.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Canby Now Community Board, where you're in charge. That's right. This is where you share your news with our listeners. Everything from birth announcements, birthdays, and obituaries to local news events that are yours and any accomplishments that go with them. If your hashtag Canby Proud, let us celebrate with you. Congrats to some of our favorite people on earth, Canby High School's Theater Troupe 632. Almost said that backwards, but it's okay. I got it in the end. For their performances in this weekend's Northeast Regional Thespians Competition. Special shout outs to Susan Nash, a regional finalist in Solo Experienced, Josiah Keene and Cadence Moore, regional finalists in Pantomime, and Kat Garrett, who was recognized for her superior work in costume design. The Thespians are hard at work these days on their winter musical, Little Shop of Horrors, which opens February 28th. Stay tuned to the Canby Now podcast for more coverage of the upcoming show. Hundreds of hungry, Dungeness crab lovers descended upon the Canby County Fairgrounds. That was a tongue twister, guys. Saturday night for the Canby KC annual charity auction and crab dinner. The event is organized by the local chapter of the Knights of Columbus, which is based at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Despite the main course, no one was feeling crabby. The generosity was flowing for the event, which was a fundraiser for a dozen local and regional charities, including the Canby Center, Canby Food Bank, Canby Utilities, Share the Warmth Program, and the Canby High School Senior All-Night Party, as well as Canby Pregnancy Care Center. One highlight was the almost $25,000 that was raised on the spot to help a local family from the St. Patrick Parish, whose 11-month-year-old daughter, Amira, was in need of a heart transplant. Our thanks to the Knights and Columbiites, auctioneer team Paul Carlson and Greg Perez, and everyone else who was involved in making this wonderful event possible. Ladies, are you looking for your mom tribe? If so, we might just have the ticket. Check out the Moms Club of Canby, a fun and active group of local moms, a great source for playgroups, park days, local events, friendship, and fun. The club meets monthly on the second Friday and holds open gym on third Thursdays. For more information about times and locations, check them out on Facebook at Moms Club of Canby or email momsclubcanby@gmail.com. The Canby Aurora VFW post 6057 and Auxiliary invites you to join them on February 22nd for their annual Iwo Jima flag raising ceremony, this year planned for the Ackerman Center Gymnasium. All military veterans and their families in particular are encouraged to attend. It's the 75th anniversary of the flag raising at Iwo Jima and the 25th anniversary of the Canby event itself. Veteran groups and service organizations are welcome to participate in the massing of the colors to kick off the event. If interested, contact Martin Lacknier at 503-849-8390. The ceremony itself starts at 10 a.m. Refreshments will be provided, and we're told there will be also a drawing for a 68 Cadillac. Tickets are now available for a daddy-daughter dance in March. A fundraiser for the Rotary Club of Canby, the evening will include a chocolate fountain, yes, cupcakes and other special treats, double yes, magical surprises, invisible yeses, and wonderful moments for a dad and his daughter or daughters to share. Frankie's daughter, of course, is making him go to this because, I mean, it's Ellie. He's Frankie. So if you're a dad with a special little girl in your life and you want to support the good work of the Canby Rotary, join Frankie for this magical evening. The dance will be from 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday, March 14th at Ackerman Center. Tickets will be purchased, can be purchased, sorry, not will be, purchased on Facebook and Eventbrite. For links, you can find this story on our website at canbynowpod.com. Optionally, dance instructor Holly Fidanzo will be offering dance lessons for dads and daughters to get ready for the big night. Let's be honest, Frankie needs to go to all of those lessons, every single one of them. Those are planned for February 21st and 29th at the Canby Center. To get your event announcement or community news on the Canby Now community board, email us today at info@canbynowpod.com.
Hey, Tyler. So it's February, and you know what that means. You know, there's a certain feeling in the air.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Tax Valentine. What? Valentine's.
No, I was saying tax day is coming up for when you file.
Oh. But it's also Valentine's, you know.
Oh man. I might need to call my wife real quick. I might be in trouble.
Okay. Well, if you're looking for some place to have a fun date night, you can always try the Wild Hair Saloon where Canby goes to eat and have fun. They've been in business for over 16 years, serve a fresh, locally sourced menu, and donate over $20,000 to Canby Sports and other causes each year. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or just go to their website, thewildhairsaloon.net.
Hey, honey. So, good news, bad news. Good news, we got our taxes filed early this year.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.